Merry Christmas. Welcome to the Ace Doctor Who podcast. I'm Paul.
I'm James.
And I'm Cam.
And this week we're talking about the episode
Church on Ruby Road.
I cross the void beyond the mind, the empty space that circles time. I see where others stumble blind, to seek a truth they never find. Eternal wisdom is my guide. I am the Doctor.
The Church on Ruby Road, yes.
The Church on Ruby Road. It's just going to be our same name of the episode for the next hour and a half.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Festivus.
I've got a beer and I have two Lindor next to me. That's a chocolate.
I've got some Baileys. I've got 15 boxes of milk tray and some cheese.
Lovely.
What have you got, Kamal?
Because I ate so much over Christmas, I've basically got nothing. A diet.
Diet Coke?
Not even a Diet Coke. I've got water, a bottle of water, you know. I was already putting weight on before Christmas. And like the not to get into the story, but like the Goblin King, I just, you know, I'm getting bigger and bigger and can't move. I was getting worried I might get to the eating babies stage. So I thought, it's got to stop here somewhere.
Well, you can eat jelly babies, mate. That's fine.
Yeah, or humbugs. They did have humbugs. They didn't have jelly babies in the episode, but they had humbugs.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, you can suck on them, so that's probably even better.
You can suck on a baby.
edit that out, please. Just edit that out. This is already digressed.
What's wrong with that? I meant a jelly baby. Yes, so we are, of course, here to talk about the Christmas Day special of a little TV programme that we like called Doctor Who.
Yes, The Church on Ruby Road, Shuti Gatwa's first solo outing proper as the 15th Doctor. Shall we do overall feelings?
I'm starting. It's
go
me.
On then. Go on.
No. I'm starting. I want to have sex with him so badly, and I'm straight. And Ash
what you get from a Christmas show.
Wants to have sex with him so badly, and she's gay, and we just think he's the most beautiful, charming, an incredible man that we've ever seen. I reckon that he is even hotter than the Fox version of Robin Hood, out of Disney's Robin Hood. That's how beautiful I think he is as a man.
Really?
I went there, Paul. I said it.
Hotter than the Fox version of Robin Hood.
That's what I said.
That's quite a comparison. Well, I think Cherry Sunday agreed with you, didn't she?
Yeah.
She was very taken with him as well.
She sure did.
When he was cast, I mean, as someone who I've seen all of Sex Education, which is probably what he's most known for. And when I heard it was him, I was just like, yeah. I was just like, this guy is so charismatic. He's just perfect.
I'd not seen Sex Education before, because as you know, I'm a monk who lives in a cave. But I saw, you know, when they did the initial release of the image of him as who, I was like, yep. No further questions, Your Honour. He looks perfect.
I have to say, casting-wise, I mean, I'm guessing Russell T has a mainstay in the casting generally, and I think he just nails casting in nearly every show he makes.
Yeah, all the supporting cast in this episode were amazing. You know, her family, isn't it? I think Millie Gibson.
But Millie Gibson, she's 19. Yeah.
Which is great. An actual companion who's 19 in the episode and is 19.
Yeah, not a 28-year-old playing a 19-year-old.
Exactly. And feels fresh, doesn't it? It kind of.
I mean, she seems older than her years, I would say. But I also love the fact how Russell T Davies just mines soap operas. Like, she's come from Corrie, right?
Yep.
And it's like, he finds these I was going to say diamonds in the rough, but that's a bit unfair on Corrie. But you know what I mean.
You know what? It's the family stuff.
It's
that
Aladdin reference. He was hot as well, and a cartoon.
But it's the family stuff. Because it's, I mean, this is getting on to what I thought. But, you know, there's the science fiction, there's the timey-wimey. But there's a lot of, Doctor Who can get quite soap opera-esque. And certainly with him, you know, the family dramas and everything. And even in this episode, like, one minute they're chasing goblins in a flying ship, the next minute it's literally they're talking about her family and you know, Carla, her foster mum, adopted mum, is like, you know, I don't want you to ever find your mum. You know what I mean? It's getting into that soap opera family level, which I love. It's great. You know, it's got everything.
He just gets in so much so quickly with such great economy, doesn't he?
Is the Paul Hardcastle song 19 about this casting? Or is it about the average age of the soldier that died in Vietnam?
I think it might be the latter.
It's about Doctor Who. I always found that annoying because obviously, like, what was the average age of the Vietnamese person that died in Vietnam? Probably a lot younger.
That's a very good point, doesn't it?
Sorry, I haven't said anything about the episode, have I? All I've said is that I found I think the actor's very hot and charismatic.
Well, no, but I mean, I'll be honest, charisma is a big word, isn't it? He's charismatic, he's charming, but because his character in Sex Education, I've only seen a bit, is different. He's not, you know, as confident and outgoing, isn't it? He's not, whereas he inhabits the Doctor, you know, a confident being who's at the centre of everything immediately. Yes. And his character in Sex Education isn't that guy. He's a guy who gets bullied.
No, he's a guy finding his way in life, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I
went back to watch, literally straight after rewatching the episode, me and Ash thought it might be a good idea to see him in that show just to compare.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed at how different he was. Obviously, he's an actor and can play different roles, but he just seemed so much younger. And it, like, I know he's playing younger than he actually is in the in real life in that show, but it's like you watch it and like, oh, I don't find this guy sexy at all.
Well, he is playing, I think, in that. I mean, what, the first series of Sex Education is probably what, 4 or 5 years ago, and he's playing. So he would have been about 27 in real life,
right?
Playing a 15-year-old, I guess.
So what you're saying is it's good that I didn't fancy him.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Great.
So James wants to have sex with him. I thought it was a jolly
good... Or watch him have sex with someone else. That would be fine.
Okay, voyeurism, fine. Yep. I thought it was a jolly good Christmas episode, one of the better Christmas episodes we've had, and it was not without a little bit of controversy and breaking a few rules here and there, but I kind of think, it's Christmas, whatever.
And this was the first Doctor Who Christmas special I actually watched on Christmas, and like live, we ran up, we were going to be late, and me and my eldest ran up, put the TV on, shut the door, and immediately Carol of the Bells comes on, and I was sold. Like, if we call this the fourth special, like the other three specials I loved, but as James and everyone else in the universe knows, I rewatched them about 100 times. But this one I loved immediately, and I really, really enjoyed it. Like every minute, I wasn't, you know, there was no hesitation. The moody lighting, the hooded unseen character, and then you see, you know, you hear the TARDIS coming in the cold open, and Chitigatwa comes out, and just his eyes. Like, and you can see, obviously, you find that later on, you know, there's something's gone on. You can see all that emotion. And yeah, it was just a fun ride, very whimsical, but it felt very confident. It felt very fresh. And although it was really upbeat and uplifting, although it did have obviously sad moments and some dark ideas, by the end, you're sort of rearing to go. Whereas, if you take something like the snowman, that Clara dies, isn't she? And it's like, you know what I mean? It's sort of, it's how a Christmas special should be. Like, it wasn't that Christmassy, bar, you know, the church and the fake snow, but it was fun, it was upbeat. I usually don't like musical stuff, but I loved the song and I loved hearing them sing, Chitigatwa, Emily Gibson. So I loved every minute of it, yeah.
How about you, Paul?
I did a second watch of this just before we started recording. And I think first time round, I thought it was a bit rushed. And I feel like I missed a lot. Like I struggled a bit to hear some of the dialogue and stuff. But second time round, I actually thought it was really tight and enjoyed it more the second time round. I guess we're probably going to get into lots of little things like breaking of the fourth wall, the musical section,
the unrealistic depiction of traffic in Notting Hill.
The Doctor doing things like going nightclubbing.
The Doctor dances.
The Doctor's been to nightclubs before. William Hartnell went to a nightclub way back
in the guessing
day.
He wasn't wearing a kilt and a vest and really, you know, getting quite sweaty and down to it though. I didn't think it was up to the level of the other three specials, but in some ways it's a completely different beast, isn't it? Because I do think I always think like the difference between an RTD Christmas special and a Moffat Christmas special is Moffat would just continue writing Who as he normally did with something either completely eerie or horrific or scary or all of those things and just have a little nod to Christmas in there. Whereas I think RTD writes for a different audience at Christmas. You can just tell that he's just going, right, the whole family's watching this. Most people watching this probably don't watch the show normally. I can bend the rules a bit and I can flex my writing skills a bit and do something a bit different. And I'm okay with that with the Christmas episode. I'm not going to get too hung up about little things here and there.
Yeah, I don't care either.
No, I mean, the thing is, I remember him saying in an interview that a Christmas episode, one, it's the whole family sitting around, but you've just had a massive Christmas lunch, you're half asleep, you've probably had, you know, a couple of drinks or something. So it's not, you don't want to have your brain fried with Moffat timey-wimey logic, you know what I mean? So you're right, it's not, in terms of ideas and themes and even character development, it's nowhere near the 360th anniversary specials. But it was Christmas and I'd eaten a big meal and I'm a bit knackered, but I thought it was just fun.
It was interesting, Paul, that you were saying it felt quite rushed, because when I watched it, I've watched it twice now, and I actually enjoyed it more the first time than the second time. Because when I watched it the second time, that I realised there wasn't really much to it. But I really enjoyed the fact it was actually for a Christmas special, quite slow. Often in a Christmas special, there's the big, you know, oh, you're going to spend a bit more money on this. There's a big dramatic bit at the start. And then, oh, those people pretending to be enjoying Christmas are actually evil Santa robot killers. Now this has happened. I remember, like, I got about 20 minutes in, and I was like, not a lot's happened. The pace of this is actually quite, you know, they spent, as you said, it was a bit soapy. It was a bit like the EastEnders Christmas special, although obviously with less drama. And like, it's like, oh no, we've had some time to spend with the family.
Well, it was about Ruby, wasn't it, really?
Exactly. It was about Ruby and getting to know our new character.
We see her at first. She's in a band.
Yes.
She plays keyboards. I like the fact that when the power went, everyone in the band assumed, oh, it must be the keyboardist.
That's such a Paul comment.
Wasn't it her solo or something? She was coming on. And then they're like, what are you doing? Are you not playing? You know what I mean?
Actually, I have to say, there are a few things which I think were just made for me, really. So initially, like, the key, you know, why is it the keyboardist's fault that the PA's gone? But anyway, and the other one was
sound engineer Claxon.
Davina McCall presenting.
She was rubbish. It's almost like she can't act.
I didn't think she was that bad, actually.
Oh, I thought she was shocking.
Do you know she actually does that show?
Of course.
Yeah, I had no idea whatsoever.
So she's basically doing what she does on ITV, but in a documentary.
I thought she was just being her presenting her show. I didn't think there was anything wrong with her performance, particularly.
I thought she was very... Well, I don't know who she is. And like,
you know who she is.
She was on Big Brother, yeah?
Yes.
And I've never seen Big Brother.
You know who Davina McCall is.
Yeah, but I've never seen her act.
You must have seen her fitness DVDs in charity shops.
Look, we know who I'm into now.
she's a really famous, you know, British presenter. And when I've listened to, and I probably shouldn't say this in this podcast, but I have accidentally listened to other Doctor Who podcasts by non-British presenters, and they obviously don't know who the hell Davina McCall is. So the international contingent on Disney Plus are going to be like, we don't know who the hell this is.
I didn't think that, actually. I was like, I was going, the considering the international money behind this now, I'm like, that's, you've really doubled down on your niche British
provincialness. But as we discussed before, that's the thing they like, though. They like knowing that in Britain there's a show called Beige with a woman called, you know, Crystal whatever, who's got odd teeth. You know, like they that's one of the reasons Americans watch Doctor Who. So I think Russell is right to keep in this kind of niche, you know, cultural trash.
But anyway, what I was going to say about it was, you know, the sound guy recording the show heard something, and he basically held up the whole production.
Oh yeah,
and I have been that guy.
You've been that guy.
I've been that guy. Going, oh God, sorry, everything has to stop now. Because the sound isn't right.
But Paul, was it goblins?
It wasn't goblins, but
or gremlins.
But the one thing that was unrealistic about that scene is that everyone was very nice to the sound person for holding everything up.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to.
Well, that is science fiction.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's like when it's sound and when it's telly, no one is nice to the sound people.
Oh, well, that's a fiction bit of the science fiction.
This is why we are such a great podcasting crew, because we bring in such niche and also very specific knowledge. Because you know exactly that was totally unrealistic, because you've been that guy. I know that Davina McCall can't act, and I also know one of the people in the show, but we'll get on to that.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get on to that, speaking of sound, and you mentioned this, Paul, before, and we haven't actually talked about this on this podcast. I can't hear the dialogue very well.
No, it's awful.
Unless I have my headphones on and the subtitles, and we're not the only ones. Everybody can't.
Yeah.
It's the mix. And apparently...
Do you really want to get into this?
Yeah, Paul. Paul. And no, also, before you go on, can I say that I can't watch any television with subtitles because it ruins the script for me. So if there's a funny joke or a funny line, I read the funny joke or the funny line before the actor says it, and it ruins any spike, particularly a show like Doctor Who that has quite, well, when it's not a Chibnall episode, has some like memorable one-liners or like, you know,
and this one
to and fro,
which
definitely did. I can't watch it with subtitles, so I feel a bit sorry for you that you have to.
Do you have headphones? Do you have headphones?
No, I just watch it on the telly.
Do you hear it? How do you find the sound mix?
For me, fine.
The dialogue.
Yeah, for me, fine. Whether watching on telly or on my iPad or whatever, no. I can follow it.
The
so
music,
Paul, get into it. Tell me.
The music does drown it out.
I'll say two things. So I think there's two things going on here.
Oh, I love this.
One, Murray Gold.
Murray Gold is back.
I love Murray Gold's like big themes, and I think he brings a lot of energy to the show, but he overscores massively. And quite often there's scenes where there's like, you know, it's literally a kitchen sink, you know, two characters talking in a kitchen about something mundane. And sometimes the orchestra is going full beans. And it's like, what? Like, why?
Like, I agree.
And it's very hard mixing speech against an orchestra going full pelt. And and that is going the whole time. Yep. And so that's one thing. The second thing is I think it is mixed in 5.1, and I don't think anyone is paying any attention to doing a proper stereo mix. So I think they mix it in 5.1 in lovely big massive speakers with the speech coming out of the center speaker and all the other bits and bobs coming out from around the room, and then they just fold it down and bounce it to a stereo track.
Don't get this in any other podcast, listeners. We know what Paul knows what he's talking about.
And so therefore, it's not a proper stereo mix. And so things aren't balanced properly, because if you separate everything out around five speakers, you can probably hear everything fine. And then you bounce it down to two without giving it proper due care and attention. And it's a big old mush. And that's what I think is going on. Because iPlayer is only in stereo.
Yeah, just hook
it into my veins, Paul.
But I'm done now.
That's it.
No, more.
Yeah. No. At the end of the day, you know, yeah, that's great. Thanks, Paul. But we still all want to sleep with Shitagawa.
Yeah.
So, shall we get into the episode?
I
think we have a bit. We've mentioned Ruby being in a band. Yeah. She goes clubbing. I really enjoyed seeing the Doctor clubbing, because I thought I thought it was meant to be signifying how much of the past he'd thrown off.
Yeah.
And which we discussed. Yeah.
And he had, like, you know, he's free. He's been set free a little bit, hasn't he? And I think, I don't think you'd seen David Tennant's Doctors 10 and 14, even 10, you know, having a good old sweaty, writhing bop.
And it was really nice in a way to sort of see the Doctor like pop in different ways, and us to get to see the Doctor and what mode he's in and what mood he's in through his movement and through his dance and by his like just his demeanor, like just a single look or a single change in face was just so so good.
I do love his leather jacket.
I love that jacket. Oh god, that was great, that brand leather jacket.
Oh, I've got sorry, go on, I didn't interrupt you, keep going.
Is he the first Doctor with a moustache?
Great question. Great question. Did Peter Cushing have one?
Easy canon.
Given the things that I have declared canon in previous episodes of this podcast, I fear I should recuse myself from that conversation.
Peter Cushing was definitely bearded.
Right.
So technically would have a moustache as part of a beard ensemble.
Nice.
Yeah, this is just cool. This is the coolest moustache since Magnum PI. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Moustaches are in, babe.
Well, I mean, he carries it off. Just the way he walks, the way he, you know,
at least he doesn't have a mullet.
The way he dances, it's amazing. It's also light. He's very light on his feet, isn't he?
He's light, isn't he?
A bit like a cat, yeah, so light. But he can get heavy, and he can get emotional. It's the first time the Doctor's cried for a long time.
His crying was good.
I think he's going to be quite an emotional Doctor.
I agree.
I got the impression, tell me I'm completely wrong about everything, if you think that, but I got the impression that they're still figuring out exactly what sort of Doctor he's going to be, actually, in the sense that I loved him straight away, he was really charismatic, but I feel like, you know when the ninth Doctor came in, Eccleston, I felt that within about two or three scenes... No. I knew exactly what this Doctor was and what he represented and who he was. And I felt that with some other Doctors as well. Even a little bit, actually, what we were talking about Hartnell when we were discussing the Daleks one with Ash. But with this guy, I don't fully know exactly what kind of Doctor this is going to be yet.
Which is great, isn't it?
Exactly. I've got the anticipation and the tingles.
Yeah, I love that.
For various reasons.
I think what we do know, though, is he's not socially awkward at all.
Hell no.
And if you think back to like Jodie Whittaker's 13th Doctor, she was quite so socially awkward. And also Capaldi was like, there was that whole, when he, you know, there's a massive difference from when he started to when he finished. And he started off being this whole kind of
grumpy,
really grumpy. Like, I don't really like people.
Really grumpy and morose. Yeah, very misanthropic. Sort of Jonathan Swift-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the opposite. We've talked about the dance, the nightclub, but then you've got the snowman falling on him, and then the police guy. You know, he meets the police guy and the sonic goes off, and then he's so charming with that police guy, telling him about the engagement ring.
That was one
she'll
of my,
say yes.
That was one of my least favourite scenes, because I was just expecting him to immediately get either beaten up or arrested.
Yeah, the social commentary was not accurate in that section.
No. There's a lot of bad social commentary in this episode, which we'll get onto.
Well, Sam,
it's very liberal, isn't it? That's Russell T.
But yeah, he, you're right, he's great with people. You know, everybody loves him. He's charming. You know, he gets people on his side. But he's still, you know, the center of attention, thinking out loud. And everything. But then I thought, Ruby Sunday is very similar as well. She's very grounded and confident and proactive too. So the two of them together make a really good team.
Yeah. I did really enjoy that, actually. I thought that was very, very delightful. We also, of course, had Chekhov's tea. That was the backbone of the episode for me, Chekhov's tea.
Chekhov's tea?
Yeah, well, it's like, if you get a gun... start of, you know, like a play.
Oh, right, right.
That gun's got to get shot.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah.
so relieved when she finally got her cup of tea.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
I was like, oh, thank God.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I've got the line here. I've given up on that cuppa and opted for a life of abstinence. That is
a
great
Chekhov's
line.
Tea. She was always going to get it in the end.
Yeah. I mean, she was, I've been going to... So where are we on the plot? We're kind of going everywhere, isn't it? The snowman's fallen on him. That was quite funny.
Then we've had the policeman, and then...
Who was rubbish.
Ruby's turned up at her attic flat in London, Notting Hill, allegedly.
Oh, yeah, Notting Hill, Bristol.
I mean, James is chomping at the bit to do a little bit of transport
James. I agree, though. I was thinking it.
I mean,
James
I did kind of think, why are you saying it's where London? Are the cars? When it's clearly not London. Yeah. Like,
and there were no cars anywhere.
Yeah, there were two things that annoyed me, but it's funny enough, like the transport stuff wasn't the main one. Our friend Denny immediately was like, "Huh, that's Clifton in Bristol." That was his only comment on the episode, by the way. That was the only thing he had to say about it. That's simply a Bristol bus stop with some fake sign written over the top.
It is, yeah.
So the fact that all the characters could like talk to each other outside in the streets in Notting Hill, I'm very aware of the area, and it's so clogged with air pollution and aggression and violent driving and shouting and everyone using Ubers and those horrible delivery guys everywhere because they can't be asked to go and get stuff for themselves anymore. It's not a place that you can have beautiful conversations out on the street like these guys were having throughout the episode. And that was just the very start of the only thing in the episode that really annoyed me, which was, I mean, we're talking about what on earth will Americans make of Davina McCall. This was Russell T. Davies doing his own Richard Curtis
application
of Notting Hill. And I know that there was still a black family in it. Good. But it was so like, this is what Americans think Notting Hill is. You turn any corner in Notting Hill, what's the first thing you see in any corner in Notting Hill when you turn the corner? You see Grenfell. Yeah. And Grenfell is this massive scar on which is an absolute metaphor for the betrayal of London, and particularly of non-white Londoners by successive governments in this country. And the fact that Russell has decided to do a Richard Curtis style, everyone's fine and nice and happy and twee and how English is this? Even with the occasional like, oh, this is the only flat in the area that's still got decent rent. You know, it did make me a bit cross, as you would imagine. I'm not going to go on about it too much, but this is always my problem with Russell T, is that his politics is far to the right of mine, and his perception and vision of Britain is it's fine and it's not. And I feel
necessarily agree. Yeah, because there were lines in there. He did drop in things about the cost of living crisis. It's the first thing we see after the cold opens, the interview, Davina McCall interviewing Ruby Sunday on the, you know, finding the family thing, lost family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she says, well, how's life for you? And she goes, well, you know, it's a bit tough. We had to move from Manchester down here, sell the house because care is too expensive. So social care is too expensive. London's expensive. You know, there are lines later on where they're saying, you know, that baby Lulubelle that Carla, Ruby's mum, has to foster on Christmas Eve comes there because the NHS is short-staffed. I know those are slight things, but this is a Christmas, you know, family Doctor Who special, and he did at least put those things in. You know what I mean?
Davina McCall even said, yeah, who would choose to move to London?
But the more serious question is, why are they pretending? Why did they have to set it in London?
He could have said it in Clifton, and everything he said about moving down would still be true.
Yeah, why?
Because Clifton's a very affluent part of Bristol, so you could have just made the same comparisons.
Is it for the Disney Plus audience?
I think it's because that people, international audiences, expect London. I do think that's what it is, and that's why I mentioned the Richard Curtis thing. The difference is that, like, Richard Curtis is even Richard Curtis has gone, oh, actually, looking back at my episodes of films of Notting Hill or whatever, yeah, I was a bit naive. Actually, I should have done things differently. And so I guess it's quite frustrating to see that part of London again portrayed in a very vanilla and sort of like a sugar-coated way in 2023.
Yeah, I agree.
Even with the odd doff of the cap to, oh, cost of living crisis, which is a bullshit phrase.
No, I agree. I agree with you that it's not London, and it was way too fake for me. And
it wasn't London, no.
No, but at the end, you know, this is skipping loads. Basically, right at the end, she's standing on the road thinking about whether she's going to go in the TARDIS, you know, chatting to Mrs. Flood. And all I kept thinking is, she's going to get run over. she's going to get run over. Seriously.
You've turned it to me.
No, 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 but...
You're making my point.
You can't... I mean, well, I live in London. You cannot stand on the road.
You can't
anywhere.
Stand on the road. They would have been run over 80 times in that episode.
It's like I don't know, what's that one? Is it the Demons of Pertwee? You know, Third Doctor Pertwee episode where they go to a little... They do that a lot in the 70s, who some random English countryside place where nobody lives. You know, Greendale and Postal and Pat. I agree. That was too much, you know, for me. There literally were no cars.
In the Pertwee era, at least, there were less than half as many cars on the roads as there are now. Literally less than half. And all those cars were about half the size as well. It was silly.
Anyway,
I agree.
I feel we should move on. But I do want to just say, we did see Ruby arrive at the attic flat to the soundtrack of Shaken Stevens, which I enjoyed.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Snow is falling.
And that was our first introduction to Mrs. Flood, isn't it?
Yes. Now, Mrs. Flood, played by Anita Dobson, right?
Who was also in a soap, right?
She played Angie, wife of Dirty Den. And
I kept hearing from the accents, I kept thinking she was called Mrs. Mudd. I thought she was called Mrs. Mudd. It was only on the credits that I realised she had a different name.
Well, there's Flood,
is this a Star Trek klaxon?
Where there's Flood, there's Mudd.
Mrs. Mudd from Mudd's... what's it? Where Harry Mudd creates all those androids and one of them's his wife. He keeps mocking him and in the end they release her and she's mocking him saying, Fenton, you know, Harry Fenton.
Yeah,
Mudd.
She's in Richmond Park. Fenton!
Sorry, we've really lost it. Anyway, Mrs. Mudd, who's also Brian May's wife, isn't it? So yes, and there's no Queen music in here, which is a bit upsetting.
No.
The other weird...
And I have seen Brian May in Notting Hill, actually, so I'll allow that.
The other kind of slightly weird thing about Anita Dobson, that is her name, right?
Mudd.
Anita Dobson,
yes.
Is that so probably one Christmas many moons ago, my family were playing Trivial Pursuit and the answer to the question was Anita Dobson and my dad was trying to answer this question and he's going, give me a minute, and we're all going, come on, you've had your time, you know what it's like.
That's so Christmas.
You know what
you're
playing,
so Christmas.
When you're playing Trivial Pursuit, yeah. Like, come on, so I didn't get this long on that history question. He's like, okay, hang on. And then he suddenly went, hang on, I've got it, Annette Dosby. since that moment, Anita Dobson, whenever she comes on the screen on anything now, if any member of my family is in the room, they'll go, there's Annette Dosby.
That's brilliant.
So henceforth, I will be calling her Annette Dosby.
I think.
And I'm going to be calling her Mrs. Mudd.
can I call her Mrs. May? I don't know if she, you know.
That's a bit sexist, isn't it?
It is. That's true.
As we're talking about Mrs. Flood, can I just, we might as well just say it. Is she the Rani?
Oh, she's definitely
Flood,
the Rani.
Flood, rain, of course.
Yeah, she's the Rani, obviously. It's
is she the one who picked up the tooth? At the end of The Giggle.
Yeah, she's the Rani. Finally got the Rani back. I've got no idea.
Is she Susan?
Is she Ruby herself from
is
the future?
Is she Ruby herself?
Gone back. There's loads.
Is she Billy Piper?
Is she Jodie Whittaker because of the hood, the hoodie?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
No, she's not Jodie Whittaker. Nice, sorry. Nice. That's
I know who you mean. I know you mean. Yeah, sorry. No, she is Adric.
Adric regenerated. Adric was actually got a bit of TARDIS blood in him, like River Song, isn't it?
Timey wimey.
There are sprinkles here of the arc, aren't there?
Yes.
So yeah, we've got Mavity
in
well.
There.
Yeah.
We've got
which we called. We're good at this. Yeah. We called that straight away.
We've got Annette Dosby. AKA the Rani, possibly.
Yeah, the Rani.
We've
also
got, I mean, is Ruby her own mother?
Yeah, so that's...
Well, or did Ruby deliver herself to the church?
Or was that the 13th Doctor?
Given that we're a pro bringing the Rani back to Doctor Who podcast, that's our political position, ideologically.
Yeah.
If they do bring the Rani back, does that mean that we've got to retire or come up with another completely unjustifiable opinion?
I'll be honest, I don't think it's the Rani.
It's not the longest. What? Can
Come
I?
On, Paul. Don't spoil
do you want me
my
to
day.
Spoil? Do you want me to spoil it?
No, no, don't, I don't, no, want, I don't want you to spoil it.
How many episodes have you been on?
No,
now?
No,
come
no,
on. You know not, that we don't want it to be spoiled for.
I don't know the future. I don't know for sure, but I've heard that there are
no,
labels.
No, la, 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 la,
no, no. Okay,
la, la,
here's what we're going to do.
All the other podcasts can have spoilers. We're not having spoilers. Come on, you're doing it on purpose, aren't you? You're doing this on purpose just to annoy us. You know we don't want to know what's happening.
Cam,
I don't know what's happening.
Can I ask you a question? Is yes. it known outside of this podcast?
Has that
been spoiled? Who she is?
No, not at all.
So why
That's
are
not
you?
What I'm saying. Okay. Yeah. No, no. Right. All I'm saying.
I don't want to
is...
know other people's brilliant theories that might also be right.
No, I don't thing. Know anyone else's theories. It was just commentary. All right, I'll leave it.
You're learning, my young Padawan.
She did have a blue TARDIS blue door though. Her door.
Oh, what her house?
Yeah,
that's cool. Did you know? Did you notice that, yeah. or did someone else notice that?
No, I noticed it.
Well, in that case, it's allowed.
Yeah, that is allowed. Yeah. Yeah. Should we get on to goblins?
I love this podcast. We are not doing this in any linear fashion whatsoever. But then a lot of the Doctor Who is very linear.
Exactly.
So that's fine. It's all good. Goblins, are they real? Yes or no?
Well, I guess the debate to be had is we're going fully into fantasy. Rather than sci-fi,
yeah. I think,
and are we down? Are we down with this?
Yeah, I like it. I think it takes it in a different direction. You know that whole thing about him. I remember when we did the review of Wild Blue Yonder, and I said, "I hope that salt thing." You know that comment about him saying, "Oh, you know, I'm really worried about you know having invoked superstition at the edge of the universe." And I like how that's still a thing. You know, it's kind of letting in this fantasy. Element because otherwise you're rehashing the same old ideas. It's just the same. I mean, it's usually you have an introduction, an alien invasion episode, a future episode, a history episode, and that's all well and good, but you've got to shake it up a little, don't you?
Yeah,
I think that's fair.
And I think it's been like a slow creep to get to this point of going full fantasy anyway, because I would argue that a lot of the Moffat and possibly Chibnall era was basically telling fairy tales rather than sci-fi.
Modern fairy tales. It was very, the whole, we're now talking about, you know, them going up there with his magic gloves to the goblin pirate ship in the sky, revealing how I waste my time. That entire section was just an episode of Super Mario, like the whole thing.
No, yeah, it was Labyrinth. It was Labyrinth for me.
No, but you're at the platform. I get what you're saying, platform gaming. You know, they're on the roof.
He runs along and jumps, like he's in an episode of Mario. Yeah. Anyway,
it looked
like
great,
Mario though. We like Mario, don't we?
I love Mario. I'm just saying that's what it was.
I just got massive Labyrinth vibes. You know, like
it was
like Jim Henson's Creature Workshop. Yeah. There's a song, a baby. I mean, Labyrinth's all about a baby being kidnapped as well, isn't it? So, it was Labyrinth. You know, if David Bowie had turned up, God rest his soul, it would have been perfect.
And it looked great. The goblins looked. I thought the goblins looked great. You know, they were people with masks and everything. I loved them running on the rooftop. Visually, it was great. It was all fun. As antagonists, the goblins and the Goblin King were. There wasn't much in it. They weren't that evil. I mean, they wanted to eat the baby, but.
Sorry, no, I just hit you.
Yeah,
sorry.
There wasn't much there. Like you were saying before, there wasn't much plot in terms of them being the antagonists.
No, they were a device rather than a plot.
Yeah,
right?
And completely. And
it's about.
But they looked great. Yeah, I wish I did wish that the Jabba the Hutt-esque goblin.
So
king,
Jabba.
Well, he had five people inside him, you know, and like proper, just like Jabba the Hutt. But I do. Wish he said something or had a bit more personality. You know, that was a bit throwaway.
Wish I had five people inside me.
I liked all the rope stuff. And
that was fun.
And the whole, it's, you know, the whole kind of talk, I guess, about magic versus, it's not magic, it's a different form
language.
Of language.
It's a language.
It's a different form of physics.
Physics, yeah.
Just because you can't explain it, you know, it's magic.
And as Kamal says, that ties back to the whole idea of the myth at the end of the universe and superstition in the universe. I agree. That does seem to be a bit of a theme here, doesn't it? And I liked that. And I liked how open this incarnation of the Doctor was to learning it. and, you know, him learning the vocabulary of rope. And I also liked how contemptuous he was of lesser time travelers.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know, time riders.
Time riders.
Time riders. Time riders. Oh, yeah, there's Bimble, which and my friend said, I didn't know that word was real until it was in there. I thought just you said that, James.
Bimble.
So, which I enjoyed. And I liked that he said, time travelers are like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, that's so articulate and inarticulate at the same time. It's perfect.
I'll tell you one thing on the second watch that I really got more out of was the song, because I didn't really catch a lot of the lyrics of the song, but the song is a lot of fun, and it's on streaming platforms for you to enjoy right now if you want to.
Yeah, I liked it. Like I said, it's a really good tune. And when they broke into song themselves, I thought that was great.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was a great kind of Christmas Day thing to do. Yeah. Do you think musical episodes are quite all the rage at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah. Star Trek did it with Strange New Worlds, a whole musical episode.
I think Supergirl,
Buffy did
done
it
as well. Yeah, Buffy did it, obviously, yeah.
I think he might go there.
Yeah, I got a feeling he might go there.
I don't know how I feel.
I've got
about
a feeling
that
this doctor is going to be a musical doctor. I mean, you know, in this one episode,
the way he moves, isn't it? As well, yeah.
We've seen him, you know, dancing at a club, and then he also got his moves on singing the song. And I just think he's going to want to do that. He just seems like quite a musical performer.
He's got a jukebox in the TARDIS. Yeah.
The bit where they start making up the lyrics. Was really fun, I thought, on lots of levels, because first of all, it's a classic improv game.
Yeah.
Right? Which you do in all, you know, if you do any musical improv, obviously that's what you end up having to do. And what I loved about the writing of it was they had to make the stuff that they were making up seem believably made up. They needed to make the Doctor's stuff funnier and better than Ruby's stuff, but it also had to be interesting enough for it to be like, oh, actually, yeah, that maybe is where your brain would go in this situation. And I thought they did all that really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, I agree.
Scripted improv is hard. And that's basically what they were doing for that scene.
Getting back to improv, we forgot to mention, I don't know, you said you knew somebody in this episode. And was it the lady who plays the social worker who brings Lulu Bell, the baby that gets stolen?
Yeah, that's my sketch tutor, Gemma Arrowsmith. So I run a sketch night called Next Level Sketch, and we set that up as graduates of her sketch program.
Oh,
so
I've met her.
We all know Gemma. She's been to our shows. Yeah, shout out to Gemma Arrowsmith. Woo, woo, woo! That's not her real accent, by the way. That's one of her three or four other accents that she does. she's posher than she is in this.
So how does she come to? Is she a jobbing actor?
Yeah. Was it Upstart Crow?
Yeah.
She was in an episode of Upstart Crow many years ago, where I think there's been a switch up between a posh lady and a prostitute, and she plays the prostitute who Shakespeare thinks is actually upper class. Sorry, that's a really niche reference. But yeah, she's been in a bunch of
stuff.
It's a good show. And she's also, basically, this is her dream. Like, obviously, my dream would be, like, I don't know, being an Oasis or something.
Isn't your dream to be a Doctor Who podcaster? Aren't you living your dream?
That's a good point, mate. Yeah, this is it right now. So Gemma has, like, when I was in class with her, we used to talk about Doctor Who all the time. She was completely obsessed with it and had, like, the niche knowledge of it. She's always loved Doctor Who. She's since written a Doctor Who novel, which has been published.
That is awesome.
And I believe she might have done some audio work as well. But when she announced ages ago that she was going to be an actual proper Doctor Who, honestly, she has been milking it on social media ever since. And quite right. Yeah. Quite right. I would be doing the same. Like, yeah, I emailed her straight away to say, well done, well deserved. Because how hard must it be to get cast as Doctor Who? My God.
Where we got to? The song, musicals, Doctor.
So, Kamal, you're the guy that, like, watches the internet and things and reads what other people say. And sometimes I feel a bit bad because I shut you down a bit because I'm, like, worried you're going to say spoilers. And also I have a bit of, like, I don't care what horrible, stupid people on the internet think about Doctor Who. But was this something that had the potential to be controversial because I just enjoyed it. And then I worried, oh, is this the sort of thing that people are going to get cross about?
I don't really know because the song came out before. This is the problem. I kind of agree with you guys. I don't, contrary to my
persona,
it's a reputation. I would say reputation's more the word than actual persona.
Okay.
I don't like to know every single thing that happens beforehand. And even like trailers now show the whole movie, you know, before you see the movie. And even with this, yeah. I agree, it's too much. They telegraph way too much. Mm. I think it would have been fun had nobody known there was going to be a song.
I didn't know.
And literally, this song... Oh, yeah, obviously you didn't know. So but like, no, but literally, one of our friends texted us, you know, what's this about the Goblin song? Denny texted, you know, on the group. And I was very, very careful, you know, I said,
thanks,
I don't, you know, to not spoil it. And like, I literally consciously, I knew, and I didn't actually hear the song until I watched the episode, but I knew it was in the charts and you absorb these things. You've got to be quite sort of strict, and you guys are, and I respect that, but there are a lot of great people out there on social media who are Doctor Who fans, sci-fi fans, and I try to stick with them and ignore the hate. I haven't really seen much hate about that. There are people obviously whining about the Doctor in the nightclub dancing, but you know, who
really
cares? But
that's what I wondered. Yeah.
Well, because they think the Doctor should just be John Pertwee or something, called Charlton. I kind of understand it. It's the same people who don't like a lot of the changes happen in society or the world. But change is nature. Things always change, you know. So I don't really care about that. But musically, I think everybody has said that they, even if they don't like musicals, they liked how the song had a purpose in the plot. It was, you know, in the plot, as was the... Ruby and the Doctor's singing afterwards. It was all part of the plot. It wasn't just randomly breaking into song like a Bollywood movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think
it made
that's
sense.
Fine.
It made sense within the logic of the world, right?
Yeah. And so people have taken to it. You know, they liked it. I haven't really seen much negative stuff about it.
Cool, man. Sorry to make you that guy.
I'm happy.
You don't have
I'm
to learn to everything that. Just yeah. to tell me. It's all
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
So... the crack in the ceiling, and
seen that before.
Then it all gets timey-wimey. Where should we go from there?
It gets really interesting because this is the dark bit, isn't it? Like it was amazing. Like it's funny because you finish watching it, and hilariously, being the rewatch king, I've only watched it 1.5 times. I'm the second.
Even I've watched it more than
you.
Yeah,
you have. You both watched it more than me.
How the tables have turned.
I know, but anyway, it still leaves you like, oh, this is really a fun, upbeat episode. But actually, it gets dark, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Literally, she's taken out of existence, and the acting here, you know, by the actor who plays Carla.
Yeah, the foster mum was really good.
Yeah, and the nan, and oh my god, you know, it really hits you. God, it gets dark, doesn't it?
Couldn't agree more. The acting was perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. You could tell that things were sinister and messed up just by the look on that actor's face. And her life is so completely different. I was almost in tears watching that scene.
Yeah, I agree. Same here.
Mm. She was so cold, wasn't she?
And I liked that the doctor was.
So cold.
800 quid.
No,
that's all it's about. What, my 800 quid?
She had no imagination. She had no soul. It had all been sucked out of her by circumstance and by this person not being in their life. It was so It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that's good.
Good reference point for this time of year as
well.
Yeah,
the importance. Mm. Yeah, the importance of people, I suppose. It's, you know, people of, you know, versus material goods. Mm. That if you don't have people in your life, it goes in such a different trajectory.
Yeah.
And I thought the way they handled it was great. And then obviously he knows what's happening, so he goes back in time 19 years to the church, doesn't he?
We're living through a loneliness epidemic, and loneliness is worse for you than smoking in terms of life expectancy.
Yeah.
And I think, and what with it being Christmas as well, and that being a really difficult time for so many different people for very various reasons. I thought that whole scene was just beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, they captured that.
Yeah.
I thought they sold it really well.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's what Doctor Who should be. It's light and funny and silly, and then it pivots. Like this Doctor, you know, he can turn, he can literally on one foot swivel, and you know, he pivoted to something really dark. Mm.
I think pivot and swivel are the right terminology as well, given what a mover he is.
Yeah. That poor, what is it that Cherry Sunday says? We haven't been blessed. You know,
oh, that was such a good line. Such a good line.
That nearly broke me, isn't it? Yeah. But then he gets back to the church and, yeah, it gets a little bit action-packed. And the gloves. We haven't really talked about the gloves because that's what
they reminded me of a pair of gloves I used to have. Which,
what? mate, you should have patented that.
I know. Yeah. I had a pair of gloves that looked very similar to that, which meant that you could use your smartphone whilst wearing the gloves. They had special fingertips. So you could, you know, you could still unlock your phone.
Yeah. They're a very Iron Man.
Yeah, they were a bit. You know? No, I like the idea of it though.
Same here. I thought it was great.
I thought it was the sort of thing where it's quite gadgety, right? It was a bit like let's make the Doctor a bit James Bond with like multiple gadgets. Obviously they've changed the sonic screwdriver again. It's a bit more fancy and it's more blocky now.
It was reminded me of something. It was like a sort of RSI mouse, wasn't it? Anti-RSI mouse, I should say. I wanted to mention the actual attic flat they lived in because
far too fancy for where they're apparently.
Well, it's huge, wasn't it?
Location aside, but I actually thought it was a really interesting shape of flat because it had to be that shape for the crack to work. So essentially the flat was one long corridor with rooms off of it, which is not typical for a flat. Really, is it?
Yeah.
And I just felt it was quite a intent. It was clearly picked quite intentionally to be that shape, to emphasise the crack running all the way down it. And it also just struck me that I thought it was quite funny that Doctor Who running down corridors, and she basically lives in a massive corridor.
That's so true. I did like that kitchen though. That 70s retro kitchen. That was pretty cool.
The yellow.
And the crack doesn't get fixed though in the end, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
They leave. He doesn't fix the crack. Cherry Sunday gets her tea, but they don't fix the crack. Poor Carla Sunday.
Yeah.
I feel bad and probably should say that the actor that played that character is called Michelle Greenidge, and she, I just want to shout out really because she was amazing and look forward to seeing her in future episodes.
Yeah, she was great.
I feel like I should talk a little bit about fostering and adoption and its depiction in this. I just felt like the whole show wanting to find her family, Ruby wanting to find her birth mother and birth parents. Just one thing they didn't really ever talk about is it was very much depicted as if that's always for the best, and that isn't the case always.
Yeah.
I felt like that was slightly overlooked, and it assumes so much to just say yeah you absolutely should go and find your birth parents, whereas that's not entirely realistic. And
I also didn't buy it that much because she seems so grounded and happy, and you know what I mean, like it didn't, I don't know whether you guys felt that.
I
was like, why does she, you're right, I mean, I like out of curiosity, but she, you know, Davina McCall calls her on Christmas Eve, which is ridiculous anyway, to tell her this, you know, oh, we can't find anyone, you know, related to. Why couldn't she have waited till after Christmas? But anyway, the point being, and she gets really upset about that, and she, you know, when she loses it a little bit later with her, you know, mum, with Carla, you know, she says, oh, sorry, they phoned, and, you know, they didn't find anyone. But I just, yeah, that didn't hit for me. I agree.
Well, I mean, there's a reason they've not found anyone.
No, I get that. But the point is, say, with Rose, from you immediately knew she didn't have her dad, and obviously that was a big hole in her life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes, that was a driver of the character.
Yeah. Oh, time machine. It's a time machine, you know. Yeah. Father's Day, all of that. Yeah. Like, and that kind of made sense. And I think they spoke, you know, when you... I can't remember. And Rose, do we meet her mum?
Yeah, Jackie.
Like, way back. Yeah, but there was the groundwork was laid. This was, I didn't buy that Ruby Sunday, who has such a sort of sunny personality, like all these horrible things happened to her, you know, because of the goblins accidents. And she's, you know, it just kind of washes over her. She's like, oh, you know, things have happened. The eggs have fallen. You know, people are getting injured. You know, whatever. I lost my job. You know, this and that. But she's still kind of, you know, chirpy and full of life. And yeah, they didn't really sell why she wants to find.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, I was surprised to learn through my friend Ash and you guys that the Vina McCall show was real, because it seemed really exploitative and really cruel. And sort of a bit sensationalist about how adoption works, but maybe it's handled sensitively. I don't know, but I found all of that quite odd.
I mean, I mean, it is quite an amazing program,
right?
You know, we got barely.
Yeah, we didn't get a full
a few seconds worth of it.
Yeah,
and
he watched it. RTD watched that Long Lost Family and wrote this bit. Haven't watched it.
I mean, I was going to say earlier, like, you know, obviously, I you're mocking me for not knowing who Davina McCall is, but like, obviously, I remember he loves bringing in other shows that are current, and that's one thing that's really fun about what Russell T does. Like, you know, obviously, we had The Weakest Link and Big Brother and all that in the very first season of the reboot. So I'm not completely against that. It felt a little bit clunky, that whole thing.
It's Christmas.
Yeah. Well, it's just that, I don't know, it's something that I think about a lot, because like there was a really good film, probably the best film I saw this year, was a film called Return to Seoul. And it's about a Korean 20-something who was brought up by, in this case, French parents, going back and sort of being drawn into finding out who their real family was because of the various wars that America has bestowed upon the Korean Peninsula over the last 70 years. There were loads of adoptions of Koreans, and all these people are now in their 20s and 30s, or in some cases older. And there's a law in Korea where you can go back and you can contact, there's loads of agencies that deal with it. You are allowed to go back and contact your birth parents once a year. And once you've done it two or three times, if they don't want to get back in touch with you after that, that's it. You're done. And in her, and it's a beautiful film, and it's like her dealing with her identity as a foreigner, as someone who's out of place wherever they are, versus what her life would have been like had she stayed with her original family. And it's all very moving. And I'm sure they'll do more with this theme in this series, but it did feel, I don't know, a little bit trite. Have either of you guys been to the Foundling Museum in London? A really interesting museum about basically how adoption started in this country. So it was the London Foundling Hospital was a charitable enterprise set up in the 18th century for the, I'm going to quote this, for the care and maintenance of exposed and deserted young children. Because at this point, there were like just babies dying on the street, right? And this guy came back from sailing the seas, as a lot of people did, just horrified by the sheer number of babies everywhere. And 17 years of petitioning, and the king finally granted this hospital. And it's very moving. You see all these names on the walls. It's like, and Walter Raleigh, Martin Scaleshoe, Biff Sulstains, William Hogarth. So like some of them, they're just named after the celebrities of their day, and then some of them are just insane 18th century names. But like this organization existed until, you know, post-Second World War, and it kind of, it was like the foundation of our modern, like, adoption, like, system, because obviously it's done much more movingly now, and it's done much more considerately now, and it's done much more carefully now than it was back then, where it was pretty brutal. I don't know, like I said, as you said, Paul, it's just Christmas, there may be much more of this to come, but as a topic, there's so much you can do with it that's interesting, I guess, particularly in a sci-fi mode, which... Yeah, I guess we'll see.
They are. I mean, they have brought it in to emphasise her not alienness, but her feeling slightly alienated, and he says, so
"Yeah, she's mirroring. They're mirroring each other, aren't they?
Yeah, they're mirroring each other. They're both lost, and they're, you know, going to find each other or something on this journey." I was surprised by that because, you know, we've got a new, fresh doctor, a fresh start, a reboot, the bi-generation, but there still is that little, you know, where he's like, "Oh, it's like me. You know, I've got no family. I've got no one. I'm a foundling." You know what I mean? There's still little breadcrumbs off the timeless child and all of that there. It's funny.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't mind it, but it's like you can't completely sort of, you know, move on. So I don't know how they'll play that.
It's just, I guess I was being a bit too political about it as always, because, like, obviously the reason why this hospital and hospitals like it ceased to be was because of the creation of the welfare state after the Second World War. And obviously we spent the last 40 years chipping away at the welfare state, and I don't want in the future for there to be the necessity for the Elon Musk Academy for the abandoned and online. You know, that's that. Like, I don't know. I found it all really moving as someone who has personally no experience of it, but have read a lot about it, and I just wonder what they'll do with the character. I didn't feel like the actor playing that character quite sold it. I'm sure she'll get better, but I wondered what you guys thought of her as just as a performance.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I was saying. I thought she was great as a companion. And, you know, a partner with Shuti Gatwa. But this bit, you know, her really wanting to find her birth mom or parents or that kind of, being distraught when Divina Kaur calls her, I didn't buy that. That part she didn't sell, yeah.
Do you think she was distraught?
Well, she wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Wasn't distraught.
Didn't sell it.
She was meant to be, but she wasn't. Yeah, she didn't sell it. She's too cheery, ironically.
Well, because she's still stable and she's got a mum.
Yeah.
So why is she looking in the first place?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get why you look, but why is it a central part of this story that she's looking? And it is because
there's something up.
Like Impossible Girl-esque. It's something sci-fi. But I agree, they're then all like a jigsaw that doesn't quite work. It doesn't all fit together that well, does it? It's a bit clunky, I agree.
Ash, again, to, you know, even though she's not joining us this time, but she made the point that she enjoyed the subversion of it being a white woman with a black foster family. And I think, and I liked that as well, because I was thinking, you know, like the Times made up that story about like white children being left with Muslims and turned into this massive controversy, and it was all complete bollocks. I liked that little playfulness of it being that way around. Again,
I'm so bad at noticing race.
Actually, I don't see colour.
I don't quite often. until you point it out, I kind of go, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah.
There was a Carla did drop a wagwan. That was quite a little bit there. And when Mrs. Flood is getting angry with Abdul, I do have to say, I did channel a little bit of suspected closet racism.
Yeah, mate. I did wonder that.
Yeah, I was like, why are you blaming him on Christmas? Is it because he's...
Yeah, I get like, it. Yeah,
you
know
what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
So the story takes us back to the church 19 years ago, as you said, Kamal.
Yeah,
and we see Ruby being dropped off again. And then we get to the killing of the Goblin King. Now,
yeah, well, he has to go up first, isn't it? Because they've taken Ruby.
Yeah.
And she's on the she's going
to
be.
So he tries to pull the ship down. Yes. And then the gloves are kind of running out of battery, aren't they? So he decides to jump off the church and use the gloves in heavy mode, as it were, to bring the ship down, and kind of unintentionally kills the baddie.
Yeah.
Now,
how do we feel about that?
First time I watched it, I was like, don't like that. I don't like the fact that the doctor's killed the baddie. The baddie's not had any chance to be shown mercy. But then the second time, I was like, he didn't really intentionally kill him.
I was worried he was going to accidentally stab the baby with that church. Do you know what I mean? He only just missed killing the baby with the steeple. Never mind Jabba the Hutt.
So it was quite a reckless plan all round, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I agree. Doctor always gives. you know, the bad guy's a second chance, doesn't he? He always, you know, he's like, he's not Arnold Schwarzenegger in the 80s.
I wish.
You know, murdering everyone. You know, he always gives them second chance, you know, whether it's the Sontarans, you know, in the Poison Sky and all that. You know, he's willing to, yeah, you know, die just to give the bad guys a second chance. I think it's weird because you're right, the moment that spy went through the Goblin King, I was like, oh my God, that's awful. But then he disappears. And I'm like, you know, oh, so it didn't happen. You know what I mean?
I thought,
in a way, in a timey way,
or phasing back to whichever alternate reality, yeah. Or because I think it jarred a little bit. Because one thing, again, I'm going to keep mentioning her because she should have come back on. She's such a wonderful guest. But Ash said, which I thought was a really good point earlier on, when you know when he was learning the language and then doing the songs.
Yeah.
Ash said,
yes,
that this Doctor isn't an imperialist. He's adapting to the Goblin's world. And so he's doing the songs because that's how things work in this world. He's not imposing his own values. And that's, you know, and we see that with a lot of Doctors as well. The alienness, you know, he'll deal with whatever that alienness is. And then sometimes the companions will be like, what the hell? I don't want to eat soup made out of children's souls. But it's like, no, this is how it works in this world. So then I think the way he just killed them at the end was a bit jarring, I think, because of that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
That didn't quite work for me.
I like you, James. I saw them sort of phasing back to their reality or whatever. But just the Doctor doesn't kill. He does dance. But on a second watch, it was not intentional, but it wasn't quite as bad as I first thought. But yeah, it was that was just a bit rushed, and it just was wrong that there wasn't a sort of scene where the Doctor faces off properly with the threat.
Yeah, he could have sung to them.
Yeah,
that would have been a nice callback, actually.
Yeah. It rushed. The ending got rushed, didn't it?
Yeah.
Did you think that Cherry flirting with the Doctor was a callback to Rose's mum flirting with Eccleston's Doctor?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I just assumed, like you said, James, at the top of the episode, I assume that everyone with the 15th Doctor. And I agree, actually. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, man, yeah.
You know, yeah, I'll be honest with
you. So everything gets resolved, and Ruby, back in the flat, attic flat, starts to piece together what the Doctor is. And then we have her sort of TARDIS scene, for want of a better word.
Yes.
And I do love a TARDIS scene where the companion or whoever it is realizes that it's bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
I never tire of watching people discover that.
Me neither.
I like the way she did it as well. You know, she didn't say it. She's like, walks around, you see her thinking, you know. I thought she sold that really well.
We also really, I mean, obviously, again, it's going to steal all of Ash's opinions, but like Russell T's really good at writing female characters. And we enjoyed the agency of her piecing it all together and figuring it all out, and her choosing to go with him rather than him going, come with me.
But he doesn't, what I didn't quite get, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys have watched it twice, he didn't want her to, he was thinking, oh, I'd like her to come with me. Then he's like, oh no, she better not come with me because that's too much coincidence.
I'm unlucky.
Yeah. There was a whole thing. Yeah. And then he goes and he spends ages there. What's he doing? Why hasn't he gone?
He doesn't want to go.
She spends ages thinking. No, but that didn't quite work.
And knobs to twiddle.
He's got a twiddle and
boxes to maintain. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, like he was very certain that I'm bad luck. You know, I should not get involved. I should just go now. But so, yeah, he didn't invite her, did he? Did he invite her at any point and then say
No. She was like,
She just goes.
When you forget, Kamal, he did actually nip back in time briefly to stop Davina McCall being killed.
I enjoyed that as well. That was fun. That was really fun, though. Yeah. I loved that. Oh, yeah. It would have been even better, actually, if, like, in four episodes' time, the Doctor was like, oh, shit, I didn't save Davina McCall's life. And then goes back in time and sorts
it out. Get back. So Mrs. Flood encourages her, doesn't
yes.
she?
Yes, the Rani.
She's standing there waiting to be murdered by a but this being science fiction,
yeah,
there aren't
it's
any.
Very peaceful. You hear what people are saying in central London. It's insane.
So she yes. seems to just sit out on her front step in a chair.
Yeah. She should get a job.
People do.
Well, I know people are. What do you think this is? It's Spain?
No, but you know, in Mutzpah Park, I have to say, I know you think there's been a lot of chat about this. In Mutzpah Park, there was this guy who did have a fold-up chair, and he would sit in his driveway all day long. Like when I'd be walking to work and like coming back from the station, you know, he'd be there, and I'd be like, "You're right." I'd be thinking, "Yeah, this isn't it. What are you doing?"
Our non British listeners, they go, "These guys know too much about London."
If you are listening from far away, just Google Mutzpah Park.
Enjoy, luxuriate in the lure and the lore.
It doesn't
of
look
Mutzpah
as
Park.
I have to be honest; it does not look half as good as fake Notting Hill.
Well, do you know what? Actually, Mutzpah Park is actually filmed in Cardiff.
Before a live studio audience. But no, yeah, she encourages her, which is interesting.
And I guess we should talk about Annette Dosby breaking the fourth wall at the end.
I didn't even bloody notice. No, I'm such an idiot.
But did you watch the little bit? Because it was sort of a mid credits.
Oh,
it was in the mid credits.
No, I didn't see it at all then because I always turn it off straight away. Because
so they don't do a preview anymore.
That's why I stopped because I don't want to know what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't do that anymore. But so in the mid credits, there was just an extra scene.
Oh, like when Supergrass start vomiting at the end of I Should Coco.
Yeah, yeah, like a secret track.
Right.
That was Ash in 1977, but I get what you mean.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, it's like just like Jarvis saying, "Bye-bye," at the end of This Is Hardcore.
Yeah. Oh, so should we tell you what happened? Well,
yeah,
I guess
please
we're
do.
Have to.
Yeah, please do.
So Abdul comes out into the street, and basically the TARDIS dematerialises or materialises. Which way around would that be?
Mm.
Anyway. Abdul runs out into the street and basically goes, "Oh my God, did you see that? Did you see that? Mrs. Flood, did you see that?"
And she says, "I'm the Rani."
And she says to him, "Oh, pull yourself together. Haven't you seen a TARDIS before?" And then she turns to the camera and winks.
Yeah. No way! Does she wiggle her eyebrows? Does she do full Groucho Marx? There's another cutting-edge cultural reference point for you all.
So that's what she does, and that's how it ends.
Okay, cool. Well, as soon as
what did you feel?
I'll go watch it in a moment.
Well, I also thought at the start of the very start of the episode, there was a narrator, and I'm pretty sure that was the Doctor.
Yeah, I thought it was the Doctor as well.
So I was like, you got the Doctor narrating his own show, and Anita Dobson breaking the fourth wall at the end. It just struck me as a little odd.
That echoed a little bit. Yeah. Okay, obviously, I can start talk about the start bit, but that echoed when we had Tennant going, "Once upon a Time Lord," for the first special, which we were also not sure about as a pod. I remember.
Did we have him talking like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yes.
intro to introduce all the new people.
Like the Ready Player One bit at the beginning.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. That's something that's happened after 2005, so I don't know what you're talking about. Davina who?
So, yeah, that's that really, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, he's sprinkled loads of breadcrumbs for us to think, oh, you know, what's all this Mavity stuff about? The fantasy stuff? Who's Mrs. Flood? Who's the person who dropped baby Ruby on the doorstep?
Who picked up the gold tooth?
Yeah. Yeah, so which is funny because, you know, they're trying to, they have reset it and they're moving it forward. But a lot of those old ideas are still there. How do we feel about that? Relying on arcs and
some of the Chibnall stuff is still there as well, twists. Which we talked about a lot. Which I'm fine with.
I think he's done with it now. I don't think we'll see it mentioned again.
Hmm. Okay. Let's see if Paul is right.
But there's definitely something about Ruby, you know, having no parentage and all that. Mrs. Flood, there's definitely something going on there, which is a little bit Clara Oswald, Impossible Girl.
Well, it's quite Amy as well, though, isn't Rose. It? With, you know, Amy River Song, time loop, paradoxes, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, flood pond.
Do you know? Do you know another hot cartoon was M'lady and Dogtanyan? I've been waiting to say that for like 40 minutes, but there's never been an opportune time to throw it in there.
There's a new M'lady film, actually, isn't there?
Yeah, but is she a sexy cat?
Evergreen.
It's evergreen.
No, evergreen. Yeah.
Other hot cartoons.
This is getting into Rule 34 territory. I think this is a bit much. Fine.
I mean, it'll always be Princess Jasmine. But,
Yeah, I have to agree with Paul.
Princess Jasmine was hot.
Princess Jasmine.
But Aladdin didn't have any nipples, but he did have pecs, which always surprised me.
Oh, that's
he had
weird,
pecs, but no nipples. I don't know whether Jasmine had nipples or not. I never saw the sequel. Yeah.
This all brings to mind that episode of Red Dwarf where the cat says, I mean, I would go with Wilma, but I'd be thinking of Betty.
I'm so glad you got a Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf and Flintstones.
She'd never leave Fred.
Yeah,
she'd never leave Fred, and we know it. Right, on that note.
On that bombshell.
Are we done?
No. I've got at least another half an hour of transport.
You said you had 7 hours
about,
worth of
and then
stuff
I've got loads more
say.
Stuff to talk about Notting Hill. But it can all wait for another episode. It's all fine. I don't have to keep talking. Also, I think Ash probably wants to go to bed soon, so I should probably let her do it.
But we all loved it, didn't we?
It's funny, mate, because like I didn't. I think I agree with the fact that this wasn't as strong as the three specials, and I thought more of it would have annoyed me than it had, if that makes sense. And doing the podcast, I've realised that I just had a nice time. You know?
Yeah.
I think we're growing as fans, aren't we? I think we've probably been through. We've been through the phase where
we survived Chibnall, though, didn't we? We survived the Chibnall era. We're just grateful for funny lines.
I agree.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Are we excited about... actually, one thing that did kind of get me, we have to wait till May. I thought it was going
to
be March.
I didn't know when it was coming back at all. And I was going to say to you lads, either off or off recording, we need a plan of what we're going to talk about between then and now.
Well, classic.
Yeah, but what bit or what theme or whatever, because otherwise we're going to go mad. I'm going to go mad without this. Talking about loneliness at Christmas. I've been looking forward to this since Boxing Day, guys. Come on, we need to keep it going.
I've just binged, you know, all of season 16 classic Doctor Who, fourth, you know, Dr. Tom Baker, Key to Time. So there's plenty to chat about. But yeah, I also, we've got excited, and the 15th Doctor's here,
and he's
great. Dancing, and he's smooth, and he's charismatic, and he's great, and we have to wait till May. And
it said, I knew it was spring, and I assumed spring was sort of March, April.
Yeah. Well, it used to be April.
Climate change.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So yeah, that's a little bit, you know, disappointing. But there's plenty to watch.
There's a lot of content out there.
You know, I mean, the universe is just expanding. Like
I think it's time we Christmas. All revisited Flux.
No!
Yeah, well,
don't do it to us.
Jokes aside, we were going to do Power of the Doctor, weren't we?
Oh yeah, we were.
We could do that.
Maybe we'll do that.
But the important thing is, that was fun. I like Doctor Who. I think it should continue. Yes. And I think we should continue to watch it and have opinions about it. That's my position.
Great. I concur.
See you next time, folks. Where can people get hold of us? Or
at HDRWho on Instagram is the one that I look at. And then Kamal, what bits of the internet are you on?
Yeah, at HDRWho. Well, all of it, to be honest with you. But at HDRWho on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. We've got a Facebook group as well. So just, you know, type in Ace Doctor Who podcast on Facebook and, you know, join, like us.
Please leave a review.
We'll sort out an email.
5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify makes even more people to learn about Motspur Park.
Yes.
Yeah. And any ideas for future episodes would be welcome.
Unless they're about watching The Flux, which we absolutely will not do.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to listen to the, you know, we don't have to do it without the ideas. We can just talk about them. We can go through them and reject them, you know, on
that. One thing I did want to mention that I've written down, which I didn't mention, is on the second, on my rewatch, I had the subtitles on, And what do you think, Cam, you might know this, but what do you think the subtitles say when the TARDIS makes its TARDIS noise?
I'm going to guess Vroop, V-R-O-O-O-P. Kamal, what's the actual answer?
Yeah, it is.
No way, really?
No, isn't there a W? Oh. So on my telly, it says metallic thrumming.
Ooh. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, no, it does. You know what?
It's a descriptive,
If you watch Classic Who, it says vroom.
Or vroop.
Vroom. Yeah, it says that on Classic Who, but this, it says metallic.
Metallic thrumming.
Yeah, you're right. Oh.
Also,
good band name, that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think I saw them third on the
Maybe
bill.
That's Ruby Sunday's
Bill
band.
Bill and Gate in 1987. Yeah. This is the odds and sods at the end of the episode, which I think would be a really fun future feature for our podcast. The Polaroids were really Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the Polaroids.
And I did like her joke about Polaroids. She says if you keep something long enough, it comes around back into fashion. And
yeah, just like...
That has become true.
Yeah. Just like my flares and my opinions.
Yeah. Well, that flat, you know, like I said, the kitchen's like a 70s retro kitchen, isn't it?
Another one, I like that Doctor curtsied the Goblin King, not bowed. Enjoyed that.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I liked his kilt.
Well spotted.
Love the kilt. Yeah, oh, I've got a question for you lads, actually, because I wasn't sure about. Most Doctors up till now have had really one episode... All Doctors before now have had one outfit that they've always got to bloody wear. This Doctor seems like he might get away with having more than one pair of clothes.
Yeah, I think that could be his thing, actually.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, which I like. It gets a bit tiresome, doesn't it? Like, he had like three or four wardrobe changes in this episode, and that was good. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. He doesn't need to go around with the world's longest scarf.
Because actually, with the 13, with Jodie, although I quite liked her cloaky coat and boots, the fact that it never varied at all at any point was a bit odd.
Yeah.
Because even like, because the fourth Doctor, the other, sometimes they take off their jacket and they pull up their sleeves or something, lose their tie, isn't it?
Do you think in the weird, dark Back to the Future 2 style timeline where we see the very moving scene of what the world would be like without Ruby, something crazy like Donald Trump's president or something? Maybe we're leaving...
No, that's too fantastical even.
Maybe we're leaving we're living in the evil timeline, Kamal. No.
Are we the bad?
No, I don't think so.
I did expect Ruby by the Kaiser Chiefs to be in it at some point, and
that's us cancelled.
Do you want to know the one bit of research I did?
Love it.
So you know when they're in the nightclub, do you want to know the song they were dancing to? It's called "Touch" featuring Tiffany Juno by Hybrid Minds.
Not the 80s, Tiffany.
It's just words. It's just words.
It's just words. It's just noise. Pop music these days. It's just noise, isn't it, Paul?
It was a nice tune. I liked it.
It's drum and bass, wasn't it? Drum and bass tune.
Yeah. The music was good, you know, again. I'll obviously need to get a 5.1 surround sound.
No, but this is the irony. But Kamal, the irony is iPlayers only in stereo.
I know. That's
Paul, would you like to talk about different types of sounds for the next hour?
This is our sound segment.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's clearly a 5.1 fold down issue.
That's your catchphrase. That's your catchphrase.
I think my favourite part of this episode.
Yeah, let's review the episode. Let's review the podcast episode. Kamal, I think I was really good in this one. I think
the best part was Paul saying the sound guys never get thanked, and that no one's that nice to the sound guy.
I agree.
Wrong.
This is getting really meta. So we'd better end it, hadn't we? We better end
it. We really should.
Yes, I think so. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.